morning. Mark Babcock is a native Iowan who received a BA in music education from Central College, as well as a Master of Music in Choral Conducting and Organ Performance from Westminster Choir College in Princeton, New Jersey. He's also done some doctoral work at the University of Iowa. While in Princeton, Mark sang in the prestigious Westminster Choir, which performs regularly with the New Jersey Symphony, the New York Philharmonic, as well as the Philadelphia Orchestra. He's worked with great musical leaders such as Joseph Flummerfelt, Joan Lippincott, Robert Shaw, Ricardo Muti, and Hugh Wolfe. He began teaching at Central College in 1999, and in 2012 became the M. Joan Farver Endowed Chair of Music. In 2018, he was promoted to full professor. As the director of choral activities, he directs a select 60-voice a cappella choir, the 24-voice chamber singers, and the large college community chorus, which performs with the orchestra. Recent choral and orchestral collaborations include Orff's Carmina Burana and Brahms' Requiem. The Central College choirs perform a variety of repertoire and have an established tradition of choral excellence. The choirs perform regularly on and off campus, and as well as tours have included Brazil, China, Italy, and the National Cathedral. And the a cappella tour in May of 2017 toured Austria and Germany, showcasing the 50th anniversary of Central's Vienna program and performing in such places as St. Joseph's Cathedral and St. Peter's. In 2018, they toured the East Coast, including performances at the historic Marble Collegiate Church and the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York City. And they're looking forward to traveling to Argentina in May of 2020, this year. He is active in church music and music education fields, in addition to his work at Central College. He's been the dean of the Central Iowa chapter of the American Guild of Organists, holding various positions there, as well as with the Iowa Choral Directors Association. He is also, I think what he's going to talk about today, the cathedral organist, choir master, and carolleer at the historic Cathedral Church of St. Paul in downtown Des Moines. He learned to perform on the cathedral's carillon during his Central College-supported sabbatical in the spring of 2018. He provides choral and organ consultation, festival leadership, and music training in a variety of settings. As a recognized organ recitalist, he was honored by Iowa State as the 2005 Organist of Iowa. His organ performances demonstrate the versatility, virtuosity, and improvisation that draw audiences to the king of instruments. If you haven't checked out St. Paul's Facebook page, you will see recordings of him performing. And I'm an amateur keyboardist, and I'm always impressed with people who can play the organ and involve their feet as well as their hands, because I'm not organized enough and talented enough to do that. And to see him playing the carillon, where sometimes he has to bundle up in the cold and wear gloves and pound on hammers, basically, is very impressive to me. And something that wasn't listed in his bio, St. Paul's just made him canon of music just this past week, which is very impressive. And not to be confused with the Roman Catholic Church's tradition of canonization. So even though we see him as a saint, you know, we are glad to welcome well and alive Mark Babcock.
Thank you for the kind introduction, Ken. I think I remember meeting you first singing in the Gay Men's Chorus many, many, many years ago. So thank you for that. I'm honored to be here. It's been a while since I've been at First Friday Breakfast Club, but as I mentioned before, my husband Tony and I met here almost 20 years ago. And then we were married in that room next year in August 07, 09. After a First Friday Breakfast Club meeting. So it's an honor to be here. A little context for this presentation. As Ken mentioned, I was on sabbatical in the spring of 2019. And Central supports its faculty in terms of professional development really broadly. We get to decide how we grow as a professional, how we continue our education. And as long as we do what we say we're doing, and that's peer-reviewed, they accept that. So I said, well, what could I do? I wanted to do a sabbatical. what could I do? And I had lots of ideas, but the cathedral has this carillon. It's the only carillon in a church in the state of Iowa. And while it gets used and it plays on the hour and it plays Westminster chime and it plays pre-recorded, the bells are electronically rung at noon and at 6 o'clock to play a couple of hymns. It really was underutilized. And so I thought, well, I'll learn how to play it. And you'll see in a moment in my presentation, there is a practice carillon, because you don't want to practice the loudest instrument in the world in public. So you'll see a replica that I learned on. And it was a great sabbatical project, but it was kind of like we do in academia. You study something or do something and you don't necessarily know that it'll have a practical result at all. You just do it for the sake of learning or for the sake of furthering the knowledge or the profession. So that's one. And then two, the cathedral. I want to get a little context of the cathedral. I was glad that Tom Stinner Custer is here today, because he and his husband attend the cathedral. And a lot of our community have been disenfranchised by the church. And for me, the Episcopal Church, from my younger days, was a witness to our community. Bishop Spong, when I was quite young, was marching in gay pride parades. And he was not gay, but he said this is the right thing to do. It was one of the first churches to ordain priests and bishops. It has taken a bold stand. Our bishop this very week, on Ash Wednesday, wrote a very bold statement and prayer for our transgender friends. The cathedral has been a welcoming place, intentionally embracing the LGBTQ community. Our most recent dean was a gay man, and we had a transgender priest for a while who's now in Kentucky. So I say that because not all of the church is homophobic. Not all the church is what we sometimes see. I'm going to go ahead and start the presentation. So I won't read all of this to you, because I don't like it when people read PowerPoint slides to me. But to know that the largest bell that is up there, which you're going to see a picture of it, is the size of a small car. I mean, this is a major tower, and you'll get to see some pictures. But they're cast bronze bells, and they are the loudest instrument in the world. Next. So you might have heard of the Iowa State Campania. Yeah. Same thing. That's just a different name. Germans call it the Glockenspiel. But it's just a tower of bells. They can be, like at the cathedral, a tower that's connected to the building, or like at Iowa State, just a freestanding tower. Next. Iowa State has one. There are actually four. There's a tower in Jefferson, Iowa, downtown as well, that is a freestanding tower. The cathedrals is the only one that's associated with the church. You can go to Iowa State's website if you want to see that. And yep. Okay. Keep going. So this is the Windsor family helped finish the original carillon. The historic Cathedral Church of St. Paul is the oldest church building in Des Moines, Iowa. And there were 12 original bells, but then in 1989 and 91, more bells were added. To be a carillon, you have to have at least 23 bells, right? And it has 25. So people ask me this. So this is, I did this presentation partly for, after my sabbatical. People said, why are so many organists, because I didn't know if I'd even be able to play the carillon. I think it's that organists often are carillonneurs because they're used to coordinating hands and feet. They're good at music theory because you can't play the organ unless you are totally musically literate. And carillons tend to be at churches, so they're at an organist's disposal. So those are the reasons that it came so easily to me. Okay, so here is the practice organ where I learned to play. These are batons and pedals, which you hit quite vigorously with your hands and feet. The only downside to the practice carillon is they sound, but they just kind of tinkle. They don't sound very loud. And the larger the bell, the harder it is to play. So I can barely play low C, the lowest note, with my hand. I almost always have to. And even in the wintertime when I'm playing, I start bundled up, and by the time I'm done, I'm taking my coat, my scarf off, because it's a workout. But that is the builder of the carillon. This is the console that's down in the undercroft of the cathedral. Next. There's another picture of it. You can keep going. So there's a better look at wooden batons that you play in the pedals. Next. You can keep going. Okay, so this is what I have to ascend. I will tell you that I do not like heights. So what I do is I count, I stare at that wall, and I count 1, 2, all the way up to 26. And that's how many steps, and then I have to step over to get to the platform. Next. So that's my view. That is my view when I'm playing the carillon. It's a beautiful view. You've got windows all around. Those cables actually connect to the bell. So when I pound, you're going to see the clappers. That actually moves the clapper to hit the bell. So if you barely touch it, it's soft. And if you hit it hard, it's loud. So you've got a lot of nuance for it. Next. So then there's another ladder that goes up in the room that I play in. There's another ladder that goes, you would be deaf if there wasn't a cement ceiling between me and the bells. You would be literally deaf. But it's actually where I play the bells. It's actually louder outside than it is where I hear. In fact, I crack that trap door open a little bit so that I can hear what I'm doing. And I open two of the windows if it's not too cold or too hot. Next. Keep going. One more. There we go. So that's the next few pictures you're going to see are pictures of inside the actual tower, the bells themselves. Next. So that's the clapper. Keep going. Keep going. So that is the largest bell. Now you can't tell in scale in this picture, but that's the bell that's the size of a car. Weighs 3 ton. Mm-hmm. 3 tons. Yeah, it's loud. Next. There's another picture of it. Next. That's me playing it. We should be getting close to the end. Keep going. Oh, is that the one that has the video? Okay. We'll see if it works.
Buffers for.
outside. David Cotton for helping me with this. Yes, thank you, David. So just a little bit of follow-up with this. This tower that I'm talking about is literally about six blocks from here that direction. And it has played. So it's interesting for me to watch this because I created this PowerPoint the fall after my sabbatical, so fall of 2019, and didn't know if I'd ever really play the carillon that much. And then all of a sudden the pandemic hit and churches were closed, everything was closed, and we went home from school at spring break, and we weren't going to go back to school. We were going to teach online, which if anybody thinks that online school is going to take place of in-person learning, just talk to any one of my students. They hate it. And I hated it too, especially in the kinds of things that I do. You can't do work with a choir online. That's not the same thing. And a virtual choir is not actually a choir at all. And so it was painful for everyone, but it was particularly painful for people in the arts to not be able to have community and to make music together. And for me, the carillon was what I would call art therapy, that I was able to do something that was productive, that was enjoyable during a time that wasn't. And then it all of a sudden occurred to me, well, we can't have Easter Sunday at the cathedral, but we could have a carillon concert where everybody comes to their normal place for Easter, hears familiar sounds from Easter in a slightly different way. And there literally were thousands of people that watched online, and the streets, I will never forget it the rest of my life, looking out those windows, and as far as I could see any direction, cars. And I played for a half hour, and it was raining, and it was a terrible Easter morning, and it was the greatest Easter morning. And when I was finished, people would not stop honking their horns. And so that has become a tradition. I have done a 9 a.m. carillon concert at the cathedral every Sunday since that first Easter in 2020. So this will be coming 2 years. Only four Sundays it was below zero. And my rule is that I'm not going up there if it's below zero. So only four Sundays has it not been played. There have been a couple times I've been on vacation where I've had a substitute, but those are kind of hard to find. I'm just going to tell you there aren't a lot of caroloneers laying around in Des Moines, Iowa. But I would encourage you to come down and hear it live some Sunday at 9 o'clock, from 9 to 9:30. Drive your bike down in the summer, take a walk, hang out. But on the corner of 9th and High, to hear the bells live is cool. The other thing that I notice is I'm a lot better at it now than I was when I took those videos. If you watch something that you see, I'm a lot better at it because I got to practice, and I've been playing it every Sunday for 2 years now. So I would encourage you to come at the corner of 9th and High some Sunday at 9 o'clock and listen. And I'd be happy to take any questions. Yes, sir.
As I was listening to the video, I was hearing the overtones and the interaction of the bells. They're in close proximity. Do you have to allow for that interaction in overtone frequencies?
So you can't play too fast, And I've had to, there's not a lot of music out there. So I've had to, most of what I play, I arrange myself. I only have two books. So most of it, I'm a music theorist. I teach composition and music theory. But I had to work with the bells for a while to figure out what's idiomatic. So you'll see me do a lot of scalar things and a lot of fifths. I don't know if that means anything to you or not, but what he's talking about with the overtones is like if you were to go down on a piano and the last octave and you'd play all those notes, all that sound just kind of squishes on top of itself. So you have to be careful that you, how you spread out the notes, if you will, and play idiomatically. But I've learned to do that for the most part. So, yes, sir.
And you and I at the Campanile there on Sunday afternoons, Carol and Mayor would come on, and actually people could go up and watch them play. And what was amazing to me was, first of all, the physicality, and second of all, was the fact that there was just a slight pause or delay, and when you hit, strike it, and when it goes off. So you almost have to have the sound in your head, rather than listening to what's going on outside of that.
Because there's a little bit of delay, partly because they're removed from you. Yeah, you kind of get the sound coming backwards. So, yep.
You kinda... Have you ever let anybody come up and watch?
I do. The question is the liability, because that it is. I've had people that want to go up that I have had to say, I don't think that's a good idea. You had your knee replaced. I don't think that's a good idea. But particularly there's that ladder, it's a long way, and if you make a mistake, there's no correction of that. And when you do get to the top of the ladder, you have to step over to this platform. So you really have to be in good physical condition to be able to go up there. And I don't know that I want the, it's not that I'm not willing to let people go up, but we're careful about that liability.
You talked about community and a sense of artists, and then later you talked about how there aren't many Carolineurs lying around. Who are your peers? Are there people in email chains? Are there conferences? How do you do professional, development?
So, I mean, there is a small network, and I actually learned from, how many of you know Carl Gravender? He's, okay, Carl. Carl gave me a few lessons when I was on sabbatical. But because Iowa State has a carillon and UNI has a carillon, there are actually a few younger people in the state that play. Ben Hoskins fills in for me some. Ben worked for the Lynn Dobson Pipe Organ Company, but now lives in town, and he's filled in for me some recently. So there are a few younger players, and I'm actively trying to recruit some people. Like, I've got a couple of people that I'm giving lessons to and letting practice on the practice carillon at the cathedral. So.
Is this the only instrument you play?
It is. Okay. Yeah, it is the only one. The ones at Iowa State and you and I are considerably larger. In fact, I think the one at Iowa State is maybe twice as large as this one.
So. I know mainly you're playing this. You know, what sort of like maintenance is involved with maintaining that? Or, I mean, with hammering a lot of those things, you call in a company from time to time?
Then we have... The Verdin company from Minnesota is on a contract with us, and they come once a year. I have to say it's pretty maintenance free. Surprising. I didn't know what would. We have more problems with the electronic playback, the mechanism, than we do with the actual carillon itself. Mechanical action things. Organs would be the same way. Mechanical actions have less things that can go wrong than electronics. So it's been very reliable. We've had to do very, very, very minor maintenance, and nothing in at least the last 2.5 years of any significance.
Following up on that question, is there cable stretch? Or are the cables so thick that they just simply don't?
There's a system that keeps them taut. So there's, and I don't exactly know what that the mechanics of that are, but they're regulated, if you will. So.
Do you know the history, like when the church was built and that was installed? Like, what's the date?
So the original building is 1885. Yep, thank you, Bruce. 1885. So the original 12 bells in the tower are of that age. It's a solid building, solid. They did have to put more steel reinforcement in when they added more bells in 1991.
You used the word idiomatic. Is the repertoire, can you play jazz on the
Carillion? Well,
could you?
Yes, I mean, you can play any tune. You have to. I mean, I can play Happy Birthday on it if I want to, and I have for somebody once. You can really play about anything, but things that are highly chromatic don't work very well because of the overtones. You sometimes have to play a little more slowly, but like the Sunday before the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, I played all spirituals and gospel music on it. So I try to use it seasonally, and if there's a around the 4th of July, I did a bunch of patriotic things. So, and I take requests.
You said you arrange many of your own arrangements. Do you share those? Do you tell yours, like, share
so,
music?
So it's kind of like my organ improvisation. People will come up to me and ask me what that, and I'll say, well, that's my own. And I'll say, well, could I have a copy of it? It's like, well, it's up here. It takes me longer to write it down than it does to do it. If you talk to any composer, it's more time consuming to get it down on paper or to get it in a tablet or something than it is to do it. So
not a large publishing.
Yeah, and I don't think this is a moneymaker. I don't think this is a moneymaker. But it sure has been. During the pandemic, it definitely was art therapy for me, but I think it was for a lot of people as well. Especially in that summer, the first summer of the pandemic, the number of people that would bring their lawn chairs and line up out there.
I didn't have a question, but I just wanted to reiterate what you just mentioned and kind of really give you kudos for during the pandemic. What you did was not only help create some effectiveness for St. Paul's Cathedral, but to the whole city. And, you know, everyone was looking for ways to, how do I connect when I'm not allowed to be with people? So what you did was a lot more than your owning up to.
Well, I felt privileged to be in, it was learning this on the sabbatical, having this Carillon at my disposal. It was just a confluence of a bunch of good things that happened, and I felt privileged. Like I said, I will never forget that Easter Sunday as long as I live. That was a highlight. Just all of the messages, all the car honking, all the good feelings in a time that people did not feel well. So thank you, Tom.
So, you know, reading through your bio and everything you do at Central and then all of this at the cathedral, does Tony ever see you?
He just follows me around and helps me.
I think one of the other things that's very special that you haven't really mentioned here today is that when you're done playing on a Sunday morning, you go to the window and you wave at everyone, kind of admitting that this isn't a recording.
It is true. I always open the windows, and the last thing I do before going back downstairs to run to a choir rehearsal is I wave to everybody who's out there.
I didn't see like music that you were reading from. Did you memorize everything or sometimes test?
I usually put some music up there as a guidance for me. Like if maybe it's just the tune and then I know what I'm going to do with it, but I usually put something up there.
And you have to hold that up there in a backpack or something.
Well, I do. I have a thing I carry up with me, and I have a pulley system I created. Cause you want both hands and both feet to climb that ladder. You don't want to carry anything.
Table, you were speaking about the pipe organ. Can you say a little more for the group here about the pipe organ at St. Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I'm maybe a little biased, but I think I'm an objective professional as well. I think the cathedral's organ is one of the best in the Midwest. Plymouth's in town is slightly bigger, but I think Cassavant would tell you, who built both of the organs, that they think the one at St. Paul's is the better because of its installation in the room. It sounds more powerful just because of, like Charles, the great American organ builder Charles Fisk used to say, the best stop on the organ is the room. And so you could have a gigantic organ in a terrible location and it's not going to sound like a great organ. So the cathedral's organ really is spectacular. Yeah, it's so listen outside and then come inside. Thank you so much. I've loved sharing this story many, many times with many, many organizations and around the state and even around the globe. So thank you for having me this morning.